This week on the Dragzine Podcast, we talked to Will Smith from the PDRA about what's going on this weekend in Maryland for the North-South Shootout, along with his racing career. We also talked to Drag Week superstar Tom Bailey about what it's really like to try to survive Drag Week. So, pull those belts tight, get ready to put into the beams. The Dragzine Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. And on the show this week, we talk with Will Smith, who not only helps promote the PDRA and run their marketing, he also is a drag racer himself in the alcohol dragster ranks in the NHRA. And then we also get to talk with Tom Bailey, and he's got some really cool stories about Drag Week, what it takes to run it, and just everything that he does with drag racing related items. So without further ado, let's get this racing party started. All right, my next guest on the Dragzine Podcast this week is Will Smith from the PDRA. What's going on, Will?
Not much, Brian. How are you doing?
Oh, you know, just getting along here in Columbus, Ohio, getting ready for us. Got some PDRA action coming up this week at personally one of my favorite tracks, Maryland International Raceway. So I'm kind of jealous that you get to play up there this weekend.
Yeah, you know, we're really pumped to be here at MIR. I'm actually sitting here now. We flew in today. We're getting everything, getting the facility ready, getting our parking laid out and a game plan for the week. And we're ready to rock the house here in Maryland. So we're looking forward to a great weekend, a good weather. I know it may be a little warm, but we're expecting a big car count. And this is obviously one of our more popular events of the season. So we're excited about that. Always have a good crowd here. So yeah, we're ready to get this thing started.
Oh yeah, it's going to be awesome for sure. You know, the racing this year has just been, you know, phenomenal from the start. For this week, I did an article with Melanie Salemi about, you know, kind of how her season's gone and rolling to this event. And, you know, typically the Pro Nitrous class, in my opinion, is one of the most brutal heads up classes out there when it comes to Pro Mod. Yeah. But the Pro Boost class this year is it's pretty gay, pretty sporty too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Pro Boost, I think it has gained that same, not that it was a second to Pro Nitrous at all, but I think Pro Nitrous is, you know, you got all the engine builders involved, you got a lot of personalities, you know, a lot of hype into that class, and I Pro Boost has got all of that and maybe more. Ever since Moroso come on board last year, which we've had some great partners, you know, with the class over the years, as well as the whole series goes. But we are very excited with the direction Pro Boost is going. There's been some new cars come out. Car count, you know, has been going back up. And like you said, I mean, Pro Nitrous is a very competitive class. Great times in Pro Boost delivers that and more. And not to jump off on a tangent from Pro Boost, because there's a lot of great competitors and teams competing in that particular class. But I think when you look at PDRA as a whole and all of our professional categories, I think the racing is tighter now than it's ever been, in my personal opinion. And I think the numbers show that. I mean, let's go back and talk about Pro Nitrous. When we were at Galat, three consecutive pairs broke the record. You know, I mean, that was just unbelievable, and it was so exciting for the fans, for the teams, and everyone here at PDRA that works real hard to put these events on. But if you look at, I think a new and upcoming class that's gaining a lot of traction is Swing America Pro Outlaw 632. That class is, I think, from a competitiveness standpoint, is delivering, you know, everything Pro Nitrous and Pro Boost is, as well as our extreme pro stock classes. So I think with all of our pro categories, Pro Nitrous Motorcycle, I think they're all on the same excitement level. You know, there's a lot of great performances. Like I said, there's a lot of great teams and competitors that, you know, travel the PDRA circuit throughout the year. And, you know, it's great. It's a great show for the fans. And, you know, when these guys and gals win an event over here and their teams, they know they've done something, because these are the best of the best, you know. And, you know, we've got the quickest and fastest door slammers and two-wheel machines in the eighth mile, and that's our motto. That's what we do, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
Oh yeah, the level of competition across the board. Do you see how much it's tightened up in just all of the classes? And that's one of the themes I kind of hear from a lot of the racers when I talk with them to do articles, is just how tight the racing is, and just that there are no ducks anymore. You have to be on your game every round, even if you're number one racing a number 16. If you make the slightest little slip up, that number 16 is going to make you pay.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm a racer myself. I've been in the sport my whole life, and working for PDRA, it's a great opportunity for myself. But being a racer and working for PDRA in the business sense, being behind the scenes and watching all this action take place, I mean, these, looking at the run sheets as they're printed after each class is over, it's like, holy cow. I mean, I'm going to use this for example. I'm sitting in the tower here a minute ago looking at some run sheets from our event in Virginia, which was the finals were not completed at Virginia. They will be completed here this weekend. So there will be two races, two finals completed this weekend. So we're excited about that. We'll see event winners crowned twice, whoever those lucky winners are. But looking at the run sheet for top junior dragster, Gilbert Motorsports top junior dragster, I'm gonna throw that out there for the young kids that are competing with us. I think, you know, that class is qualified based on reaction time. The number 16 car, if I remember correctly, was a 028 light. I think one and two were 000 lights. So you've got less than 300ths of variation there between 1 and 16 based on reaction time of juniors. You know, I mean, you could have a 30 light and not qualify, and that's not a terrible light by no means. You know, the Cool Shirt Systems Pro Junior Dragster presented by Knox Crown Products is just as competitive, and you know, there's guys, you know, guys and girls running low 790s missing the show because the filter's so tight. And MagnaFuel top sportsman, Lucas Oil top dragster, same deal. I mean, I've followed a lot of these guys for many years before working for PDRA. A lot of them are close friends of mine, and watching those guys, and, you know, they, you know, have a, you know, 10-thou package and they're on the trailer, you know. And these guys are bracket racing, or, you know, high 3 seconds, low 4 second runs, depending on, you know, their class and their setup. I mean, that's pretty impressive when you can bracket race that fast and race, you know, race the starting line and race the stripe, you know. And that's why I'm just going to go back and say, I think, you know, we got the best of the best here, and we're very fortunate to have the opportunity to have everyone compete with us and provide that platform for them.
Yeah, and you guys put on such a great show from top to bottom, and then just with all the classes, you know, top sportsman and top dragster, just kind of going off of those two right there. Like you said, the competition level on those classes anymore is so insanely difficult. Any event you go to, it's bad, but when you start drawing in that, you know, many high-level cars to an event, you know, it really shows if you win in the PDRA, you've earned that victory. There, you know, you ran the gauntlet.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, like at the World Finals, we had 98 top sportsman cars. I mean, that's like unheard of, you know. I mean, it's so cool. I mean, it's like, and you see these, you know, fast door slammers bracket racing, these awesome top sportsman cars, and they're wrapped all the way around the corner as far as you can see. And I mean, to have 80, 90 cars at given times at certain races throughout the year in one class, I mean, all I can really say on that is wow, you know. So, you know, a lot of good cars are loaded up on the trailer and not racing on race day. And I know I'm fortunate to know a lot of our competitors and, you know, in top sportsman, top dragster. And I've had some friends of mine that have come over and run a race or two, and they're like, wow, we love it here. You know, the atmosphere is great. It's you know, it's a family run deal, but they're like, man, this is the best of the best. They're like, man, we're just happy we qualified, you know. And some that didn't were saying, hey, we're just happy to compete at this level and be here. And that all makes us feel good, you know. Like I said, I think everyone who comes over here, they run good and, you know, go around and they're successful. I mean, they really should pat themselves on the back because job well done to them and their teams for sure.
Oh, yeah. Trying just to be able to, like you said, to make the fields and make the fields and then go rounds, it's a very, very difficult and tight process in a lot of the classes. And, you know, Outlaw 632 is one of those classes you guys have kind of helped grow quite a bit. You know, it's, you know, mostly like a Southeastern kind of class. And now the platform you guys have given that class has really shown off some very talented drivers and as well as tuners with what they have to work with and what they have to do. And some of the rivalries and the personalities have come out of that class have been pretty top notch.
We are very happy with what that class has provided the PDRA over the last couple of years. We took a chance on it, wanted to see what we could do with it, see what kind of engagement we got from, you know, competitors. We know it was a southern based class, and a lot of those guys wanted a big stage to race on, you know, and we were able to work some things out. And you know, the first couple of years we tried it, you know, we did a few races a year, not a full deal. And you know, we've got some great marketing partners. Like I said, this year, Swing America is the primary class sponsor, with presenting sponsors of Precision Chassis and Eastside Auto Transport at various races throughout the year. It is just, I mean, there's guys building cars specifically for that. You know, car count has been steadily increases. And once again, I was looking at the numbers on that class. I mean, to see all the guys in the 20s now, I mean, I think the field is so tight. Well, it's definitely tighter than it's ever been. And I think what's cool and what's appealing to racers to kind of run that as well as the fans is that there's a lot of variety. You know, there's different, you know, you got naturally aspirated motors, you got nitrous motors, you got, you know, different weight breaks to how many systems are running or what transmissions are utilizing. You know, there's different rules, you know, so it's not, I don't want to say what I would call like a cookie cutter class. So, okay, here's what you got to run, that's it, you know. So there's room to utilize your skills, you know what I mean? Like there's some very talented people, and I think everyone in the class is very talented, but you know, some guys, you know, were able to really tweak their engine programs and stuff. You know, they've got a window there, you know what I mean? So I think that's what's really cool, is because there's a lot of opportunity for guys to, you know, do what they wish per se, you know, with that class, with their given combination they choose to run, their given rule set. So you know, it's a challenge, you know, as every class is, but I think it's a class with a lot of, it's definitely got a lot of interest, a lot of traction right now. And I think, it's only going to continue to grow. I mean, because it's grown tremendously since we first gave it the opportunity to run here with PDRA you know, it's a unique class, you know, and that's where we want to be, you know, like Pro Nitrous, Pro Boost. We don't run them together. We run them separately, and we like to do our deal over here, you know, and it just adds some uniqueness to our categories that we allow compete to and put on a show for our fans.
Yeah, and, you know, working up the ladder there, then you have with Extreme Pro Stock and what's going on with that class is, you know, I didn't realize how finicky even those cars were until I talked with Chris Powers about what it would take to run a 3-second pass. And he said, everything has to be perfect. If it's not perfect, you don't run 3 seconds. You go, just end of story.
Right. Yeah, that's Pro Stock is, you know, Liberty Gears is our sponsor for that class. And we can't thank Craig and Nicole Liberty and their team for supporting that class. And the Extreme Pro Stock category is a category we all love. And appreciate, and everyone who understands it to, you know, know what those guys have to work with to make them run as fast as they do, and try to get that, 3.99 or quicker. It's very impressive, and that's been a very exciting class, and it's always fun to watch because now you've got a barrier that's out there that I don't want to say the last barrier to be broken, so to speak, in our form of racing, but it's a milestone. Everybody's trying to get, become the first member of the 3 Second Liberties Gears Pro Stock Club. And, man, I really thought it was going to happen last year at Gallatt. And I think Jeff Dobbins, if I'm not mistaken, went 4 flat with a 1, and then he actually did go 390s in testing, but it wasn't, accounted for, wasn't official in competition. But so those guys are right there, and I know everyone has really been working hard on their engine programs over the off season, and we've been really looking forward to hopefully seeing that broken this year. Don't know if it'll happen this weekend with as warm as it is, but hey, you never know. Stranger things have happened. So, but I think by the end of the year, I think we'll crown someone the first member of the Liberty Gears Extreme Pro Stock Club.
Yeah, I think it'll probably happen at one of the fall races for sure, once they kind of can still continue to collect data and figure stuff out more. And then when they have the chance to really use everything that they've learned when the conditions are right, someone will be able to light the board with that in qualifying for sure.
Yeah, I'm thinking at the World Finals. That's I think most people would agree that that's probably where it'll be, and I know those guys are looking forward to getting there and cooler temps and a good racetrack, top-notch facility. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's unbelievable with any naturally aspirated combination, even if it's a big cubic inch one, that just if the weather's not there, those cars just – it's very hard to make them happy, let alone go very fast and happy and not eat themselves.
Like you said, you've got to make the perfect run. You've got to have – everything just line up perfectly, and when it's your day and everything is aligned properly, hey, it is, but more times it's not, and it's just got to be that perfect day, that perfect track, the perfect conditions, and the driver to make his perfect run.
Well, it was like when Rivenbark set the radial tire record, everything was in the right place, but what a lot of people don't realize, like standing trackside, shooting pictures, and just hanging out, you can tell when someone's on a really good lap. And with that car, it's so effortless. Like, there's some cars that you just think they're going to either catch on fire, flip over, burn up, crash, and they're on a decent pass. But that car, it looks like it's going slow, and then it lights the board with some ridiculous number, and it's just they've got that thing on a string. Even, in big tire trim, it's still just as consistent, just right down Broadway.
Oh yeah, and like you said, it can be so deceiving sometimes. Whether, like I said, as a driver, whether you're in the car or watching the car from outside, sometimes you'll be surprised what number comes up, and then others, you know from the time the buttons turn loose or the clutch is let out that, that it's not there. But like you said, everything's just got to align perfectly, and just.
Yeah, it's got to line up. It's got to do what it's got to do, and it's with these cars. You're really, I've said, carpet bombing horsepower. You're throwing a lot at it, but there's still even with a big tire pro mod car, there's so much that someone has to do to make sure that it's going to get down the track how they want it and put that big number up, because even slight variations are going to cause issues.
It's amazing to see how all of these, let's just say pro mod cars, but we've got pro mod cars running top sportsmen basically, but these cars at this level with the electrical devices and traction control and all of these different types of things that man has made and engineered for these machines to enable them to run as quick and fast as they have. And I got my start working for on Mike Castellano's Pro Nitrous team years ago, and so I mean, I like pro nitrous because that's what I used to do. But with that being said, where we were 10 years ago till now, I mean, the advancements that has been made, I mean, drag racing as a whole has just, and in my opinion, has just blown up. I mean, there's so many great companies that are invested in drag racing and making our sport quicker and faster and safer and more appealing, you know, than it already is to fans and you know, future competitors. And I just think we've come such a long way in a short amount of time these last few years. And to hit on that, you know, we've got it. We would not be the PRA without our great marketing partners and the great companies who support our series and our racers. And so many of our partners, and all of them, have played a huge role in getting our sport to where it is, and particularly the PRA. So, yeah, I want to mention that because we've got a tremendous amount of support, like I said, with our marketing partners, and couldn't thank them enough. And without them, we wouldn't be here. And definitely without those great companies, these hot rods would be throwing down the performances that they are.
Oh, yeah. Race cars run on $100 bills and high-octane gas. That's just a fact of life.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you can't get around that. And, you know, fans that are going to be coming up to the race this weekend, it's funny you mentioned the thing about electronics and, you know, how advanced these cars are. And some of the old school guys will probably get it more than anybody else. But if you get a chance, you know, PDRA's got awesome open pits. Folks, go look inside one of these cars. It's absolutely insane the amount of technology that's crammed in one of these cars. And if you're someone like me that wiring challenges me to no end, and I see people like Michael Burton posting pictures online of the stuff he wires, and then you look inside these cars, it blows me away that all that technology that's packaged into any of these high-end cars to make them do what they do.
You hit the nail on the head, and like I said, as me being a racer, I'll tell you one thing about me in a race car is like a clean wiring job, and that's something that just intrigues me. And all of these machines out here, I mean, it's crazy that you can get so up close to them. I mean, you can see how they're put together. You can see everything about them. And like you said, for the fans to come out, every ticket's a pit pass. Racers and teams want you guys to come by their pits. They want to show you their rides. And if you sweet talk couple of them, or probably more than that, they'll let you sit in them, you know. So I see a lot of guys posting pictures where, you know, some PDRA racers, you know, let them sit in their car and get a picture with the kids and whatever. So you know, I can promise you the action you can come out and see this weekend in Maryland or at any PDRA event this year is something like you've never witnessed before, that's for sure.
Oh, I think that's one of the awesome things about drag racing, and, you know, the PDRA does a great job with this, is the interaction between the fans and the drivers is top-notch. You go to some events, and it's really – I go to all kinds of different racing. You know, I'll be covering some dirt track stuff this year. And sometimes getting in front of those guys, even as a media person, is difficult, but – a lot of times, you know, you might literally accidentally trip over a racer that's packing his own chute. You know, I've seen some of the guys even let little inquisitive fans kind of help them along as well, which is, it's a great way to kind of keep people interested in the sport.
Most everyone in drag racing is, I mean, a lot of people, they haven't forgotten where they come from or what they do, you know, and we as drag racers love to tell our stories, and we love to promote our sport and talk about it. And I personally love to educate, whether it be kids or adults or anyone that wants to know anything about drag racing. And I try to take every opportunity I can when I see fans and meet people and to tell them how great our sport is. And like I said, to educate them on what we do and who the PDRA is. I mean, Our racers, our teams, they love to interact with our fans. So that's definitely something we like to see happen, is fans coming out and talking with the teams and racers. And, you know, they can walk away with some cool souvenirs or some parts that run over 200 miles an hour, you know. So that always puts a smile on the little ones' faces. And, So it's just great. It's a great family environment. You won't see any better racing action than right here at the PDRA. And I just encourage everyone to come out and check it out.
Yeah, the coverage that can be provided is one thing. And I tell people, you know, support racing, watch it on TV when you watch live feeds, that's great. But drag racing is one of those sports that's best consumed in person. Circle track racing, you can sometimes, it's actually better to watch on TV because you can see more of the action. But drag racing is such a, you know, with these fast cars, it's such an assault on the senses. Take someone that's never been to a race before, even, you know, with a PDR race, just take anybody that's a drag racing virgin, take them so they can experience just the sights, sounds, smells, and everything. And you'll get someone, you'll create a fan quickly.
I tell everyone, drag racing is a sensory sport. There's absolutely, like you said, I mean, I'm just going to reiterate everything you just said. You watch it on TV, watch it on live feed. You can see the runs and all that's great. But the sights, the smells, the sounds, what you feel when a pro boost car gets on the two-step before it takes off on the starting line. I mean, to make your hair stand up on your arms, you know, and people are just like, you know, just blown away by that. And I've brought a lot of people out to the racetrack before in my days, and no one ever left that track that day didn't have a smile on their face. Like, they were like, holy cow, that's the coolest thing ever, you know. So it's something you definitely have to come out and experience firsthand to really, really understand and appreciate it for sure.
And to kind of pivot off of that note, a lot of people might not know that you race quite a bit, and, you know, you're involved in an A-fuel car now. And my wife, the first time I took her to Norwalk for the Cavalcade, I was explaining different classes to her, you know, what throttle stop racing was. And when the top alcohol cars came out, she was confused at first between the difference between the two. And I said, you know, screw blower cars, really loud, sound like they're going to fly apart. The A-fuel cars are going to hurt your eyes, so be ready for the fumes, because she'd never been around a nitro car before. I'm like, it's you're going to see it, taste it, smell it, and it's going to get your attention real quick.
Yeah, I drive for Harada Motorsports full-time, and for Dave and Kenny and Chio Harada, and it's an honor to drive for them. And I'll tell you, that A-fuel car is definitely the coolest machine I've ever wheeled before. I'm a nitro guy. I mean, I love top fuel and funny car, always have. And, you know, I definitely have the goals and aspirations of wheeling one of those machines one day if the opportunity comes up. But safe fuel car is just an awesome ride. And we like to beat up on the blower guys. You know, it's kind of a rivalry that, you know, the blown guys don't like the injected cars and the injected cars don't like the blown cars. But at the end of the day, we're all racers. We have great time, a lot of great friends, relationships out there. And it's definitely comparing those two cars from the appearance being dragsters. Yeah, they look kind of the same, but they are completely different animals, you know. And the injected car, obviously we run smaller cubic inch engines, but we're injected on nitromethane, which we can run up to 95% is the maximum. And we're on a pounds per cubic inch, meaning the size of what our car weighs depends on how big our engine is. So it's a class that has a lot of variety and opportunity, you know, where we can engineer our own parts and try different things. And that's what's cool about the class. You know, we try different engine combinations. You can try different injector scoops or injectors or run different rear wings. I mean, there's just a lot of room to do different things. And I think that's what really makes it interesting, because we're always trying things, you know, to get better and to be quicker.
Oh, it's for me, the alcohol class is both funny car and dragster. I still call dragster top alcohol dragster, because that's what it was, you know, when I was growing up for years, that's always what it was. But yep. Watching both of those classes and the nuances and what goes into them, is definitely interesting. Is, you know, with the dragsters, the difference between the two cars and how they leave and, you know, how they behave. It's very interesting from a drag racing nerd point of view to watch, you know, a blower car and an injected car both make a pass side by side, to see the similarities stop at their dragster. After that, it's totally different on how everything works for them, power application to the track, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, you know, we went to Columbus for the regional event a few weeks ago, and unfortunately we didn't get there, but everyone was behind the eight ball because it rained for 2 days and we only got one hit at the track. And
welcome to Ohio.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we, smoked the tires at the hit. So not only did we not qualify, we didn't have any data. So we went to Norwalk for the Cavalcade of Stars regional event, and which we ultimately runnered up there and qualified fourth and ran really well. On our first pass, you know, we were just trying to get down and make a good run. And we really wanted to get some runs on this new combination we're working on. And, man, as we talked about earlier, and a lot of people have already seen it, but I did about 850 foot wheelie all the way down the track. And, car left the starting line, you know, picked front end up a little bit like it does, and all of a sudden it just set back on the wheelie bar. And I'm like, well, it's going straight, it feels good, it's not rattling the tire. So I figured it would gently set the front end down, and I got to about 8th mile and it felt like it came up a little bit more. And I'm like, you know what, it's time to abort this run, you know, or pedal it. So I actually pedaled it, got the front end down, and made the run, because, you know, it's an 8-car field and we had to make sure we were qualified, and we're only going to have one other qualifying round after that. So that kept us in. And ultimately we bettered that run in Q2 to put us solidly in. But with that being said, what a ride. I mean, it went 351 to the 8th mile on the back tire. And that was up to the 8th mile, I think it was 300s quicker than anybody else. So we're like, wow, if it tripped it with a front tire, how much quicker would it have been? And then what would it have run out the back? So that was our first full run attempt this year. And it's like, wow, you know, so we feel like we've got a good combination. And like I said, ultimately we runnered up at that event. And we've got the NHRA Route 66 Nationals in Joliet, Illinois this weekend as well. So it's going to be our first national event debut for the year. And we're excited. We ran really well there last year. We ran 280. We were the only car to run 280 there last year. And that's kind of a big deal in the top alcohol class. You know, everybody, that was actually one of my personal goals last year. And I'm like, man, I hope I can run 280 before the year's over. And it actually happened on like my third or fourth attempt, you know, down the track. So that was really cool. So I think we've got some momentum now, and we've got a good game plan, and we're really excited to see if we can walk away with a Wally this weekend.
Circling back to the wheelie thing, being on someone that crews on a radial tire car and being through the experience of watching the car leave planet Earth, all four tires, I tell people wheelies are cool to everybody that has to work on the car or pay for the car.
Yeah. We actually, we made the run, we got back to the trailer, we serviced the car, and one of our crew guys, which let me give a shout out to our team. Our team worked their tails off that weekend. I'm very fortunate to have the guys that we have working on our car. And Brian actually was looking over the front end and realized that there was the mount that held the rack and pinion up was broke, and it wasn't terrible, but it obviously needed to be fixed before we tried to run again, you know. So fortunately the team pitted next to us, let us borrow their welder, and Dave, you know, welded up the best he could. I mean, everything was fine, it was safe, everything was good, you know, but it definitely did, you know, a little bit of damage, and we had to replace a tie rod end. And like I said, it's cool to put on the show for the fans, but it definitely hurts the pocketbook and the amount of time we have to put in to fix, you know, everything. But all in all, it was cool. it was a really good, I should say, experience. But I told Dave, here's what was funny. When we made the run and I you know, pedaled it to get the front end down, I pulled the chutes, and then as I'm coasting down the shutdown, I'm thinking, wow, that was definitely going to be my quickest run ever. And I mean, the car never stopped accelerating. It felt good down low. It was on the back tire. You know, everything was great. And then I kind of got ticked off at myself. I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't have got out of it, you know. But then again, I'm like, well, it did pick up a little more on the wheelie bar, so I didn't want the wheelie bar to break and this thing go over backwards. But in that 5.5 second run from start to finish, it's amazing what goes through your mind. And I can tell you two or three, you know, images and situations that went through my mind just in that short amount of time, you know. And Dave did a wheelie similar to that, not as far out, in Gainesville years ago in the same car. And we were talking about that, and I told him, he said, you know, it's funny that you can think that quick and think about that much in such a short amount of time, you know. And you've got to be one with the machine, you know. You've got to be mentally in front of it, per se. You can't wait to react in whatever it is. I mean, fortunately, the car was going straight. It felt good. It was on a good run. Set the front end down all as well. But, you know, you definitely got to be prepared for what may come, you know, and you got to be able to react before you have to think to do it.
Oh, yeah. Any super fast car, if you're reacting, you're behind. You have to stay in front of what's going to happen and have a good instinct, because the experience factor of getting that is usually expensive, and the car leaves on a rollback.
Yes, absolutely. It costs a lot of money to run these cars. Costs, you know, decent chunk of change just to make a run in it. So you've got to try to minimize the error, obviously, you know. And I've told Dave multiple times, I think I'm starting to build a reputation as a quick leaver. I've had a lot of people come up to me, and, you know, since Norwalk and even last year, I mean, I've, you know, been trying to do the best I can on the starting line, and those numbers are showing. And like I told Dave, there's a lot of variables in drag racing. There's so many variables in this machine from when we start it to we pull the chutes and turn off the end of the racetrack. And I personally feel like the more you can eliminate or control, so to speak, the better off you are. And I told Dave, my job is to give you the same result every pass as a driver. You know, so hopefully you're not concerned what I'm going to do or if I'm going to do this or that, but I'm just doing the same, you know. And mentally, in my mind, with, you know, what it takes to run these cars. And I work on these cars. I mean, I put motors together. I do the bottom end there with the track. Like, I'm like very hands-on with the car. So I know what it takes to physically get this car ready and make a run. And you just can't make mistakes. And you've just got to be completely focused on the task at hand to get the car from point A to point B, you know, and do it consistently and accurately. I mean, there's so much that goes into you start the car having the right fuel pressure at the right times and, you know, doing the burnout properly, you know, trying to, you know, not put a lot of heat in the clutch. There's just so many different things to where that's why you can't think, because you're just doing the procedure step by step, not thinking about it, you know. And I think having that mindset has definitely made me a better driver, better racer, I feel like.
Well, that was a great explanation of how all that works. And I think it's a great way to kind of round things out here. And, you know, appreciate you coming on to talk about PDRA and talk about your dragster adventures. And I like to give all my guests one chance here, you know, right here at the end, to let the folks, the Dragzine Nation, know where they can catch you at and what's going on in the World of Will.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on. PDRA, you can find out all the catch all the action on www.pdra660.com. We keep all of our event results up there. You can check out all the results from Maryland this weekend, as well as the finals from Virginia. And, of course, every other event. We're on Facebook, PDRA Racing, Twitter, Instagram, and catch us all there as well. Follow me on Facebook, Will Smith Motorsports. You can also follow our race team at Harada Motorsports. And check all of our sponsors out, all of our great marketing partners. I'd like to take a second and thank Lucas Oil, NGK, Scapel, 4G Transportation, Tico, Pro Things, and Race Ugly Speed Shop. We've got a lot of new partners on board with our race team this year. We're really excited to have them on board with us, and we try to keep our pages updated as often as we can during race weekends, keep everybody up to date on what the Harada Militia is doing. And so, yeah, give us a like on Facebook. And if anybody's got any questions, feel free to reach out to any of those pages. And I or a member of my team will get back to you as soon as we can.
Well, there you have it, folks. Make sure you give the PDRA a like online. Give Will and the Harada Motorsports a like online. And thanks again for coming on the show, Will.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity, Brian. I appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
All right, my next guest on the DragZine podcast is Mr. Tom Bailey, one of the most prolific racers in drag week history and an all-around hot rodder. What's up, Tom?
Not much. How you doing, Brian?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Thanks for coming on the show. Getting ready to start to swing into full race season here in the Midwest, finally, if it ever stops raining, right?
Yeah, exactly. The weather warms up. It's supposed to be 50s this weekend again, so.
Yeah, it gets warmer, and it's funny just the huge swing you see between where you're at in Michigan, where we're at here in Columbus, can be kind of crazy with the weather, and it kind of wreaks havoc when you're trying to plan where you want to go race.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a lot of times you're just, if you're not chasing raindrops, then, I mean, you're chasing the temperature, so.
Yeah, it's kind of, the way I try to explain it to people is, you know, cold temperatures and, you know, good air is fine for racing, but when it starts to get too cold, it's not fun to try to put high horsepower cars down a track.
Yep, exactly. You get that small window, that window where it's awesome, and then usually by that evening it's no good anymore because it's too cold. So
track gets cold, you start seeing that dew form on cars, track managers get that nervous look in their eyes. It's just not a fun situation.
Yep, well, and then exactly a multi-day event, and the next morning, now it's for the track trying to get the moisture out of it, so.
It's a never-ending cycle. And I guess one of the biggest things you're known for is your drag week extravaganzas with some of your rides. And I guess, you know, maybe for our listeners' value, you know, how did you exactly get into the whole drag week, you know, run what you brung kind of deal?
I think, like, I raced when I was young, and then obviously, I mean, you come through that period where you get kids, responsibilities, and lack of funds, and all of those things. So then when I started to get back into it, it's like, man, I don't have time to go with kids' events and sports and everything. I don't have time to go do, like, a series. I'm like, but, so it's going to be limited what I do. And then I'm like, well, shit. And then I read about Drag Week, and I'm like, well, that's actually perfect because at least now I can drive the race car to and from the racetrack. So now I'll get even more time in the car. So, and that kind of is what started the whole thing around a Camaro that I was building or whatever, called the Indian Burial Ground car. But I'm like, hey, well, I'm just going to make this street legal and drive it to the track. So that was the start of it.
And that's how it all began, right?
Yeah, that was probably 2007, 2008. And then it was a long road to go to the first drag week I went to, which was 2010. So,
and then eventually you picked up Project 6 Seconds. Was that somewhere out of Pennsylvania? Wasn't the owner there, or was it Ohio?
No, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area, like Denzi Terzic Pro Rides or whatever. They had done the car, and basically, like, I had my plan with the Indian Burial Ground car or whatever. Like, after I went through the first setup with it, and we kind of took it to where it could run, which it was a mild steel chassis or whatever. So 750 was the cap for it. And once we started to reach that, well, the plan was that hey, we're going to run that. Well, then we start building a new motor. Well, the new motor was to go into the next car because it's like, well, this car can't handle what we're going to put down. And then going to build a car after getting the motor like straightened out, whatever, that whole budget thing. And then so about the time we got done with that motor, put it in there and then get ready to build the car, it's like, oh, well, that might become available because they wanted to get rid of it. And they were trying to get rid of it as the whole car is a Pro Charge setup, which I had a Pro Charge setup on my other car, but I knew I wanted to do turbos. And so then whatever, talked with Denny and everything, and Abel was to fast forward a year by going, buying that project and as a roller, and then taking my drivetrain out of the other car, the new drivetrain, and putting it in it, and then obviously replumbing it for twin turbos and the changes or whatever that I had that I wanted. So
that kind of, it was interesting. You kind of set the world on its ear with you get that car. And it was funny you mentioned, you know, the changes you want. A lot of people don't realize when you buy someone else's roller, it helps. It definitely helps expedite a timeline like you're looking for. But at the same time, when you get one of those cars, you start looking like, man, I want to change this, that, and the other. And there's a lot of things that go into it before you just start jamming motors in and going fast, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's where luckily the engine setback and stuff like that for a Pro Charge car and a turbo car are very similar. So you had that going for it to where like a nitrous car, it'd be a lot different to try and make that change. But, and then, yeah, like you said, I mean, you just got the plumbing and everything. And actually just this winter started rewiring the car because it had gone through what it had in it when it was his car. And it's just, it was so piecemeal together that, I mean, it was just, it all worked, but it was just the ugliest thing ever wiring wise. So finally made the commitment after winning drag week this year, like, hey, I mean, I'm just going to take care of the car now, like get rid of all this crap and rewire it so that it is functional wiring, not just a whole bunch of copper that doesn't go to anything anymore. So
those wiring nests where you start going through like, what does this go to? And it's just a random wire that was cut at both ends and left in one spot.
Oh, well, we actually had, when I was troubleshooting for, because what I wasn't, it was kind of a last minute deal that I'm like, oh, well, I'll take that to drag week last year. Well, then I had a problem with the boost controller. And it's like, so then, I mean, and that was kind of the final straw, because I'm trying to sort out the problem with the boost controller. Well, the wire coming out of the boost controller going to the trans brake changed colors three times. So like on one end, I'm looking for one color wire. On the other end, it's not that color. So then I'm like, I trace it back. I find the second color and I'm like, oh, so I need this color. Well, come to find out, it was actually another color different by the time I got it sorted out. But
oh, I would scream. So, I would be so angry at that point. And, you know, I've never been able to go on drag week myself the whole week. I've seen where it's ended in Columbus when, you know, when Larry went that first six. And
that was my first year. That was 2010.
It's insane what, like, that battle of attrition that goes into that. And it's funny hearing different racers kind of take on it. You know, what's your take on what it's like to go on drag week with a ridiculous car that probably is, you know, borderline insane to even have on the street?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously, like, your mentality with anything, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, if you're subjected to chaos a lot, then you become accustomed to chaos. And that's the thing, like, the first year, 2010, like, made the first drive from Columbus to Indy, to the hotel in Indy. And that car, obviously, I mean, it wasn't ready to go on drag week or anything, as pretty much everybody's always in the same boat. But that was, we get to the hotel in Indy, me and the buddy or whatever that rode with me, and whatever. We just laid on the grass in the median at the hotel. Like, that was the hardest thing we had ever done in our entire life. Was driving at the time an 8-second car 300 miles or 250 miles or whatever to the hotel. And like, and fast forward, and now it's like, oh, I mean, you just go right to the track the next day and it's still almost like nothing. To where, I mean, I was still at the hotel at 10 or 11 at night. I mean, it was like, it was really a no big deal thing by the true standards of it. But if you haven't done it, like, that's like mind-blowing. Like, so,
and now we have Johnny Lindbergh and Richie Crompton driving a you know, a Nova, a wagon with a freaking blown alcohol funny car engine in it from stop to stop. So it's kind of wild how that's all, you know, changed with what people are able to do.
Yep. No, and that's the thing. And like, I mean, the technology, like the things that we've learned, like over the years, I mean, it's crazy how far it's came with trying to do something like that. Because the first time when you're doing it and you're talking to manufacturers and you're like saying that, hey, well, how long will this fuel pump last? Oh, well, you'll make plenty of passes with that fuel pump. I mean, going down the road. Oh, you could go to your cruise and stuff like that. I mean, no, like 1,200 miles? Like, can we do that? Oh, I don't know. Nobody's ever done that before, but if it works, will you tell us? Okay, thanks. And I mean, you just go with that. I mean, it's the, you deal, and there's so many little things that it's like, they're kind of your side thing, like charging. You're like, oh, I'll just slap an alternator on it. Well, obviously then you have all kinds of issues with charging and cooling. Like there's all these little things that it's like, that's anybody that asks me, I'm like, hey, the most important thing is make sure that you've got cooling and make sure that you've got a charging system, and truly go over that stuff and make sure all that stuff is going to live for a long time. Because driving to the local Dairy Queen doesn't put a tax on it like going on Drag Week does. So.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, the way you describe that, it kind of reminds me of when you watch the old documentaries about, you know, space travel when they were first trying to figure out what they're going to do. It's like, we're going to make it? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it, yeah, like you, just the things that are that you guys put these through these cars through and survive is absolutely just, it's mind blowing. Really, when you're in the industry and you know what it takes to go that fast, and then to see it a car last the entire week, that's pretty radical to say the least.
Yeah, and what's cool about it, it's like typically it. It is that MacGyver type thing for the fact that, like, you go to the local track and you go test and, hey, something goes wrong. What do? You just put it in the trailer and take it home and fiddle with it for the next week or whatever and go back to the track and try again. Well, we don't have that. Like, that's, I guess, like, what's good and what's bad about it is that, hey, something's wrong on the side of the road. Like, you got to figure out how to get this thing to run to make it to the next track. I mean, if you're your local track, are you ever going to tie up a couple lifters and make a pass on seven cylinders? Well, no. You put it in the trailer, you're done for the weekend. So not on drag week. So, I mean, you figure out whatever to make the thing live or work or barely get by just so that you can live another day.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing each year you see what people go through to have that badge of honor to finish drag week. A few years ago, my buddies from Indiana, they were Facebook Living them swapping out a 5.3 LS motor like at the track, and it was just wild to watch them do that, where a lot of people just give up. That, you know, it's that never give up hot rodder attitude that drives you to think it's a great idea to, you know, source a local engine and put a fresh engine in a car.
Yeah, exactly. To go, and especially there, you're downgrading to whatever, a junkyard LS to go make a 12-second pass with.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the thing, but it's kind of that old school mentality of making something work. And like, I mean, nothing against a lot of the millennials, but a lot of the young kids never even dream of that. Like they don't look at things and say, how do I solve this problem? They just stop at the problem.
Yeah, with racing, it's definitely not a stop at the problem kind of deal. It's, you know, how do I work this? You know, how do you work the problem to get the end goal? And it's very interesting to see different solutions and the thought processes that go into a racer's mindset on how they're going to solve something.
Yep.
And that's
the part with it. And the stuff that, like, that I've seen people do, like when the year or whatever, like when I made the pass on seven cylinders and tied it all up. It's like, well, shit, I learned that from another drag weeker. That was actually they did that and it worked. So why can't we? So, I mean, and that's the part that it's like, you would never really think of trying that stuff, but in a pinch, you're like, well, what's the worst that can happen? So
yeah, I found the best stories either start with what's the worst that could happen or hold my beer, watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, kind of going through your drag week memoir, what's a story that might stick out to you where you were going to do something like, man, this is going to be kind of sketchy, but I got to do this to finish up.
Yeah, I mean, probably the time when tying up the lifter or whatever, like that was in Union Grove or whatever in Wisconsin. And it's like we're sitting in the hotel parking lot and we're and lashing the valves, and Steve wasn't there. That's after Steve had messed up his back or whatever, dirt biking. But so Ryan was with me, who's at Holly now, and it's like we're lashing the valves, and all of a sudden this one's got like, I don't know, a quarter inch gap. And it's like, that's not good. Like, that's not supposed to be like that. And then we get ready to pull the head off to then try and sort something out. And it's like, well, we don't have time for that. Like, we have to go make a pass. We have to make it to the track, make a pass, and then we have time to work on it. And I'm like, well, I've seen Mashmeyer tie him up before or whatever and drive him, so let's just do that. And Ryan's like, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Seems like all we got to do is get it up to where it's not going to bounce. The cam's not going to knock it out. And as long as the oil can still pass through, then we'll be fine. So that's what we did. Tied it up, drive it to the track, made the pass with it, which, whatever, it was real slow to spool and took it forever to get up on the two-step. And then you go, and it was lazy as hell. But then it kicked in. I mean, it still went like a 670. So on seven cylinders, and then back to the pits, and then drove it to, that's actually Jim Plimpton lives in Wisconsin, and called him and said, hey, can we come over to your house or whatever? And so we went to his house, had to drive it obviously to his house with the trailer and everything. We tore it down, went to a got it the cylinder heads, and like basically went through the whole thing, put it back together, and then made it to the next stop for the next day. So
wow.
And that's the thing. You don't just rebuild it and get ready to race the next morning. You fix it, and then you got to drive 250 miles to get to the next track. So,
yeah, that's what I was talking with Larry about, you know, what it's like to be on drag week. And he said, you know, the worst part's to drive to and from the track because you're listening for noises, watching gauges, and just hoping nothing bad happens.
Yep.
And the other cool thing you get to watch about drag week too, I think that, you know, at least it attracts me to wanting to watch it and check it out and even go on at some point, is just the crazy variety of combinations of cars you get to see on drag week.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, there's anything anybody can dream up. And I mean, and that's the, and it's the people, because that's the thing. Like a lot of those people, I mean, I only see them that 1 week of the year. So obviously with Facebook and stuff like that, there's some communication and stuff in that everybody kind of knows what people are doing, but it's that 1 week a year. And it's like you see them every other weekend, because it's just that kind of group of like-minded people, like all together doing the same thing. And it doesn't matter whether you have a 20-second car or a 5-second car, like everybody's in that same boat together. And the helping, like if you see a car stopped on the side of the road, there's usually 20 cars after it. So usually the other trick to drag week is just don't be the last guy leaving the track, because there's nobody behind you to help. So
it's like running from a bear. You don't have to be the fastest guy. You just got to be faster than the slowest guy, right?
Exactly. So, well, in the hope that some people behind you actually have decent spare parts.
Yeah. And for the people that get to follow you on Facebook, it's kind of wild, I think, to get to watch, because you always hear that argument, you know, oh, that's not a street car. That's not a street car. And I kind of laugh at that. I'm like, well, it lasted a week, went 1200 miles, got beat on the whole time. That kind of makes it a street car. You know, anything could be a street car if you're brave enough. And what we get to see you do, you put quite a few miles on your rides as well during non-drag week, right?
Oh yeah. Nope. Yeah. They usually, one of them's usually at home in the garage all the time. So, and take it all the time. I mean, that's the thing. Like, once you've driven it 1200 miles, well, driving down the street to go to dinner or whatever is like, that's an easy thing. And it's like, in so much of the stuff, I mean, like I said, you've sorted out the stuff over the years that are the main culprits that, I mean, they'll kill like your little cruiser going to the coffee shop. But once you've sorted out to that level, it's kind of real basic. So, and and you're just seeing more and more. Like, everything's getting faster and faster. I mean, look at, I mean, averages. I mean, it's just, it's crazy the amount of 8-second cars that are out there now. Like, legit 8-second cars. Oh. I mean, let alone 7s and 6s and everything else. I mean, it's just, it's crept up so much to where it's mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah, that's, it never ceases to amaze me every year how the bar gets raised on what is streetable horsepower. Because 15 years ago, if you had an 8-second, like, legit street car, you were a hero. And now it's like, oh, just take a CTSV, throw some heads, you know, do a couple of things, and there you got it. It's amazing what these cars are capable of now.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, Sapinero or whatever with that big ass wagon, I mean, he's probably going to break into the 6s with that thing this year. So, I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
It's crazy and awesome to be a part of, to see things like that happen and what guys are doing with these cars and what they're capable of. And, you know, you, like you said, you've got this, you've got your combo pretty much figured out. You know, if you had to do another build on a car, do you have something that you would change yet again, or would you stick to kind of the same formula?
No, I got some other stuff or whatever in the works that's pretty radically different. So, but and nothing similar to anything I've done. So, just what I mean, it's like, if I could have started out by doing that, then whatever, like, obviously it never would have worked or anything like that, but it's like the technology, everything's gotten like came so far along that it's like, okay, well, I think I can do this. So, but, that won't be this year. That, I mean, it's in the works, but next year. So,
well, that'd be awesome. Looking forward to kind of seeing that and hearing what you got going on there for sure. Cause, so far you've definitely proven that you're able to make just about anything go fast. So that'll be fun. And, you know, you did some time behind the wheel of a blown Pro Mod. And I remember we talked about that, we did a quick video on the differences between that and a turbo car. And kind of looking back on it now, maybe some people haven't seen the video, kind of describe what it's like jumping behind the wheel of a screw-blown, angry, very angry Pro Mod.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously whatever. I mean, it's 100% different than, I mean, turbos are nice and calm and quick out the back and, I mean, a big screw blown car is cool as hell, but it's loud and obnoxious and like stubborn. Like, I mean, basically it doesn't like anything. It's just pissed off all the time. So it's like, and it's just, you look at the numbers and like, and obviously how quick those things come off the line. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, we did some 890, 60 foots. I mean, it's mind-blowing how quick that is. But then you go to a 980 and a turbo and it's like, that's just nice and easy and smooth and quiet, like, and it's radically different. And it was awesome experience to do that for a little while, and a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. So
it's sort of like going from drinking a cheap whiskey to a fine wine on violence level.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just drinking to get drunk, or actually drinking because you like the taste of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I'm always a huge fan of the screw blown cars, but yeah, they're angry. They just sound like they always want to fight, always.
Yep.
And I remember at the shakedown, you guys had an unfortunate little bit of a thermal event. And I was standing on the starting line. I saw it from behind. I saw that flashbang. I was like, holy smokes, that looked bad. And then seeing it on the replay on speed video, it looked even more wild. It looked like an old school, like John Force Nitro Inferno. What was that like?
It was quick. So, I mean, obviously whatever, like the flames came up quick, and then it's trying to, with anything, trying to have your feel of the track to know where you're at, to try and stay off the wall, because you can't see anything. So, and it's happening at the top end. So, I mean, it's happening at 250 miles an hour, and now you're trying to figure out how to get this thing stopped without hitting something or rolling it in the sand or whatever. But, I mean, it's just your reaction. I mean, it's basically a lot of luck and a little bit of skill. So
yeah, using what experience you have, and basically it's like it's a short period of time where things get real busy real quick, right?
Yep. No, and that's the thing. And like in that, it's like I was drifting towards the center because obviously I didn't want to hit the wall. But then I heard the other car go by, and I'm like, "Oh, I guess I might have been close to him."
Yeah. Guy in the other lane's going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! What's going on here?" And
so,
yeah, that was definitely kind of crazy. And I like, you know, it's awesome that the safety equipment and everything's come so far, and hearing drivers kind of describe what it's like to go through. And the more experienced drivers typically just kind of like, yeah, it was kind of crazy. You know, that's, you know, it's that calmness. I think that's what keeps a bad situation from turning into a, you know, even worse situation.
Well, yeah, that's probably the biggest thing is you can't just freak out. You got to know that, go through your routine and know, hey, first I got to get this thing stopped before I get out.
Yeah, you don't want to do the Ricky Bobby jump out of the burning car kind of invisible fire thing. That's not good.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, obviously the safety equipment, I mean, that's just of paramount importance that you're always wearing the right gear. It doesn't matter if people are looking or not looking, or tech inspection is good or not good. It's like you have to take it into account for yourself to know that, hey, I've seen bad things that can happen, and I need to just make sure that I'm not cutting corners with that. So,
oh yeah, that's, you know, even in my, you know, 10 second car, when I know it's going to be a nitrous pass, all the gears on, I don't care how hot it is, got the jacket on, you know, you're ready to rock, because you don't want to be caught in a bad position when things go sideways, because then you're going to be wishing you were prepared.
Absolutely. Well, especially, I mean, look at the flywheels and stuff like that coming up through the
holy smokes.
I mean, and so you see some of those, and those always make you double think about some of that stuff. And it's like, I mean, just like some people don't run the liner inside there because it really can't be seen. It's like, well, you know what though, but you know it's not there, and I would be worried about what that liner's protected. So,
oh yeah. But, yeah, that, you know, just the other thing kind of going off of that too is dyno pulls. You know, seeing stuff blow up all the time. When there's dyno pulls going on, I don't like to be anywhere close to a car. I like to put as much material between me and that car as possible, because you're in an enclosed space, and if something decides it doesn't want to be part of the show anymore, it's going to end badly for everybody involved.
Yep. No, exactly. And just think which way that stuff's spinning and know that it's going to continue to move in that direction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I took enough high school physics class to realize that the battle of man versus rotating metal at high RPMs, man never, ever wins.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like electricity. It's going to take the path of least resistance. That's usually through you. Same thing with things that are moving at a high rate of speed. You know, you're not going to stand a chance.
Well, yeah. When you look at what some of that stuff tears up, and then you think that you couldn't even damage that with you and your pocket knife or whatever. So like, what is your skin going to do, or your bone? Like that's so little resistance to that part.
Oh,
so
that's what terrifies me. You know, working trackside is not necessarily getting hit by something big. It's a smaller part. We actually had it was the Sweet 16. One of the turbo cars grenaded a turbo, and the compressor wheel down track took out one of our live feed cameras, destroyed it.
Wow.
So, you know, imagine you're standing, you know, especially that far down track, and even if it let go earlier, that thing's going to be bouncing along. You know, I always tell new people at the track, treat everything at this facility like it could kill you.
And, right. And, well, because it can.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, starter on the scooter, he could kill you. You know, water box person with their mop, they're not paying attention, something could happen, it could kill you. Just always pay attention. And you'll live. Yep. You'll have a fun time at the track. And kind of spinning off of that, you know, you've kind of gotten involved with that roadkill night shenanigans that happen up in Detroit. You know, why don't you let the folks know what that's all about?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually pretty cool, because obviously everybody should know Woodward, that like the first paved road in the country, and that's the first place where street racing truly took place. And in Roadkill Nights is pretty cool because they actually get the permits, they close it down for a day, and we're able to drag race on the street. So they basically, they bring in all the barriers, they do the whole nine yards to set up a drag race there, and it's a couple hundred people do it, and just runs around robin or whatever through. So with that, obviously, I mean, that's that, and it's a street car event because your car has to be self-powered. You got to drive it back. It's got to have DOT tires. There's a lot of different rules there that kind of keep it very streetable, which they changed the one rule. But the first year when they did it on Woodward, the rule was that you had to round robin. So once it got down to the final four cars, those cars ran off. Well, so one faced two, and then one faced three, and then one faced four. And then without turning the car off, like basically you came out the end of the track and you came back, and it's all eighth mile stuff. And that was probably the most street proven that my car had to be in that, because I ended up making 6 8th mile passes within 20 minutes, three of them without ever turning the car off.
Holy
so
shit.
imagine how I unhooked the trans temp so that I didn't know how hot it got. But just imagine what that trans temp was the third time putting it up on the trans brake. So I don't know, but it was definitely hot.
Yeah.
So, and the fuel was so hot that you couldn't touch the fuel rails. They were boiling. So after I got to sit for a couple minutes, it almost didn't start back up because it was vapor locked so bad because of the heat of the fuel, because you're sitting there pumping that fuel at whatever rate through a 2.5 gallon fuel cell, my race fuel cell. And I mean, it was crazy. And that first year I won it. And then the last 2 years, it's actually got cut short because of rain, but they changed it now to where it's more like one versus four. I think it's a top eight now. So 1 versus 8 and kind of that runoff order on points. But it's happening again this year. And then, so with that, a lot of people come in from out of town. So that's where I've started we call it Tom Bailey's Woodward pre-party. And basically the Thursday and Friday before the event happens on Saturday. So Thursday, Lapeer Dragway, which is about 45 minute drive from that area of Woodward. They sponsor a track day. It's all fundraiser for the Epilepsy Foundation of Michigan. And so we go test at Lapeer. Then Friday, we have a big get together with just basically cars that shouldn't be on the street. So it's basically a VIP deal, and it's all parachute cars. So cars that legitimately need a parachute when they go to the track. And last year, we had about 150 of them just all hang out, have a band, barbecue, the whole nine yards. And this year doing it again, so we're limited. We've got parking for about 200 cars this year, so open to fill it up with cars with parachutes. So, and last year we raised about 10 grand or whatever for Epilepsy Foundation, and this year, like with the sponsors and stuff that we have for it, I mean, we're probably going to be closer to the $20,000-$25,000 mark for a good cause. So,
see, that's awesome on so many levels. That, you know, that's one thing I will say about the racing community at large is when we have the opportunity to really raise some funds for a good cause, we show people how it's done for sure and enjoy it the entire time.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's the whole thing is about giving back. And that's where, like, I'm not a promoter. I'm not any of those things. And I don't want to be, because the work I have to put in for this one little day is crazy, but it's all about the cause. I mean, it's all about doing something that's right and trying to give back to the community. I mean, you've been fortunate enough to have race cars and go racing and do a lot of fun things that you like. I mean, we need to take care of some of the people that just struggle on a daily basis.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's just that's awesome to do that. And that whole Roadkill Nights deal is just, you know, that's totally wild, to say the least, watching all that go down and the cars that try to do it. And I like your description of the cars with parachutes that shouldn't be on the street. That's definitely makes it for a very interesting visual as well.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's Dodge sponsors that Roadkill thing. So on Saturday, like, I'm sure they'll have it this year, but like last year, I mean, they had Leah do a top fuel burnout right down Woodward. So, and Hagen did one with his funny car. So like they legitimately have that, and there's a train crossing right there. So you had like last year, I think it was Joe Barry was running the race on Woodward as a train was coming through. So it's like, how many times can you see a drag race happen with a train crossing the street that you're racing on? Like,
yeah, that's some old school stuff there, but at the same time, it's mildly terrifying to think about that as well.
Yep. Super cool. So,
but no one ever accused, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, our hobby is going as fast as we can in a short distance. So no one could ever accuse us racers of being the sharpest knives in the crayon box, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what makes it fun. And that's, you know, what kind of brings us all together is just the whole, like you said, the whole spirit of the event. Well, Tom, I appreciate you coming on the show for sure. Some great stories here. And I always like to give my guests an opportunity to kind of do some shout outs and, you know, kind of let people know what's going on and where they can find you at.
Cool. Yeah. I don't know, the Bailey Racing Facebook page or BaileyRacing.com. I mean, that's usually where the current stuff is. And that's it. Other than that, I'll be at Drag Week and Roadkill Nights.
And you say it so matter-of-factly as well, yeah, just going to Drag Week, that's about it. And it's sort of like last year when I saw you at the Shakedown, and you and Steve show up and you're going to race, and you guys look like we just finished Drag Week, and then we thought we'd come up here. And I could tell in your eyes you thought it was a good idea at the time until you got there and realized maybe this wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. That quickly changed as I rolled the car out of the trailer and into a shitter. So, I mean, it's like, yeah, we drove all night. We finished, we did the awards, and then we drove from Atlanta straight to Shakedown, get there in time to unload the car for the first qualifying session. So, yeah, maybe it wasn't the smartest decision, but
it falls into a classification, like I say, racer. You know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and then it just turns out it wasn't.
Yep, exactly. So it was still a good time. Awesome. Like, you always get to look back at those things, though, and say, man, why did I even do that? But we had fun, at least. So.
It's all that counts. Well, Tom, once again, thanks for coming on the show. We look forward to seeing you out this year.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks. Well, that wraps up the show this week. Thanks for Will and Tom stopping by to be a part of it. And as always, may your wind lights be up bright and your reaction time stay crisp. Stay safe out there, folks. Until next time.